All right. So we asked the question last hour, kind of setting this thing up. Folks, how's your water? All right. No matter where you live, if you have what I call city water, all right, you're in a municipal system, or if you have a well, like you live primarily like in a rural area, how's your water? Do you have any idea how your water is? I think a lot of people's probably the answer is no, and sadly, I'd be one of those, okay? I really don't know what's in my water. I haven't tested it in a long time. So I'm on the Penn State email list, and I see this story a couple of weeks ago about some recent testing involving private wells across Pennsylvania and stuff found in the water. I'm like, uh-oh, this is one I want to pay attention to. So we reached out to our friends with the College of Agriculture, and we want to welcome to our show Faith Kabuyi, who is with Penn State Ag Extension. Faith, first off, good morning. Thanks for coming over today.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. All right. First off, if we could, we always like to ask our guests something about themselves. So let's start. If you would tell us something about yourself, like where you're from and so on. What do you do for Penn State Ag Extension? Tell us about you.
Yeah, absolutely. So I am an extension water resources specialist, and so I mostly work with members of the community addressing some of the water quality challenges ranging from drinking water. I also do some works with ponds and lakes, and some some stuff with private septic systems. So we educate people on how to maintain this infrastructure to better take care of themselves, but also to, in some ways, improve the quality of their lives. So originally I am from Kenya, but right now I am based here in State College area, and I'm happy to be here and learn about the water quality issues over here, and in some ways see how I can participate and contribute.
I have two follow-up questions there. One is, how did you end up at Penn State? How did you end up in our area? What drew you here?
Yeah, so I actually went to grad school here at Penn State in the College of Ag Sciences, Ag and Bioengineering Department. I studied biorenewable systems, and I had the privilege of working with my advisor still right now, Dr. Heather Presendance, who is also who was the PI on the project that we are here to talk about today.
And then how do you get into, I'm always just fascinated by, how do you get into this study of discipline? Like, were you always interested in just water supplies, just interested in science, and eventually you kind of matriculated this way? Just how did you end up in this specific field?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I ask myself that every so often. It seems like the bottom line is that it appears I was constantly interested in the environmental field. So as an undergraduate student, I studied environmental health science. I had a very good opportunity as an undergraduate student to get introduced into research. So my undergraduate was in Benedict College in Columbia, South Carolina.
Okay.
And my advisor then was doing some research on water quality and water treatment. And he approached me and said, hey, would you like to do some research in my lab? I had never, ever understood what research was, but that is kind of the initial interaction with water quality research that got me interested in studying,
yeah,
and understanding what's going on and how to solve the water quality issues that different communities are facing.
Now, you're with Ag Extension,
yeah,
and we know that there's an Ag Extension office in every county in Pennsylvania. Do you travel a lot, or do you just primarily work here?
So a little bit of both. So with the Water Resources team, we work with a wonderful group of educators who are locally based in each county. And so in some cases, we need to travel to come together, depending on different programs that we have going on. In other cases, though, whatever we develop here on campus is transferred back to the educators who are local and work intimately with members of their community. So it's a very cohesive effort.
All right. Now, the reason I saw this is, again, I saw this story from a couple of weeks ago that Penn State Extension did a novel 3-year citizen science study. that's a lot of words, about water quality with private wells. Okay. So let's start just with the basic question. What was this study? What were you trying to find?
Yeah, so Pennsylvania is one of the states that have a lot of people depending on private water systems. And those include private wells, some include springs, and some people also use cisterns. And so in this study, it was a two-part study, and the PI for those grants that facilitated that study was also Dr. Heather President. So I was just a co-PI on the last part of the project. So the goal for that study was to understand the occurrence of PFAS, or per- and fluoroalkyl substances, in private water systems. So PFAS is something that is becoming of concern right now, and there's a lot of monitoring in public water systems to try and understand what the levels are and how those utilities can improve their treatments to protect health and safety of their customers. Private water systems, on the other hand, it is a voluntary responsibility of the homeowner or the well owner or the user to make sure that that water is protected from contamination, it's tested and treated. It can be a lot of responsibility on a regular person. And so the project was trying to understand, because they're understudied, was trying to fill that gap, to monitor them and provide an opportunity to educate people in some cases on how they can better improve the water quality, the quality of their water, to protect their health.
Now, you mentioned the chemicals. They have fancy names.
They
They're usually just called forever chemicals. All right. Now, Faith, why that name? Forever chemicals makes me a little nervous.
Me too.
All right. Why is it forever? What is that exactly?
So I don't know the history of how they came up with the word forever chemicals, but this is my understanding of what could be going on. So PFAS in general are very stable chemicals. They are chemicals that have very strong bonds between carbon and fluorine atoms, and they have very unique properties. They're used for different reasons. They could be used to allow a product to be water repellent, stain repellent, to be able to persist under high temperatures or resist that degradation from temperature fluctuations. So this, for it to get these properties, the chemical has to be strong, and also allow it to, for us to use it in those different scenarios. The other side of it is that this bond formed between the molecules and the atoms to make the chemicals are also very durable and stable, so they take a very long time in the environment to degrade. So we like them to be strong and durable when we use them, but then at the flip side of it is that once we are done using them, they persist longer in the environment. So that name, forever chemicals, perhaps was coined from the nature of those chemicals once they are released into the environment, where they might be existing for a long periods of time due to low degradation rates in the environment.
Faith, I can tell you're a scientist. That was a very great explanation there. All right, the obvious question, how did these chemicals, which are not, I guess, natural, get into drinking water? How did the connection get made there? Or how does it get made there?
Yeah, so because we use these PFAS in a wide variety of products, they have a variety, equally large variety of pathways that they can inadvertently or unintentionally get into water systems. That could be during manufacturing, so perhaps discharges from manufacturing industries. It could also happen during normal wear and tear when we're using some of these products. In other cases, it could be when we are done using them and we are disposing them. So those are some pathways. Another common pathway is through wastewater. So as we're using these products, they are being introduced in our domestic wastewater that's leaving our homes. So they typically end up going to wastewater treatment plants where they're treated, and they're very persistent in the environment, so they can resist the treatment process, degradation process during treatment in wastewater treatment plants. And that could lead to their presence in treated wastewater, or the biosolids, which is the leftover solids that are being treated after wastewater treatment. So depending on how these byproducts are used, they might end up into the environment. Other cases, common uses have been in the past, the aqueous film forming firefighting foam that have been used for their strong ability to put off high fuel fires in airports or military training stations. So those have been some hotspot sites in some cases. If those products were used in the past around there, those are some cases where they might have contaminated surrounding water resources in the environment.
All right. Yeah. Now, what I call city water, municipal water, all right, what you were just sort of talking about, those facilities, wastewater facilities and so on, absolutely get rid of all the forever chemicals before it would come to my house? Without doubt, those big, usually big, giant round ponds or whatever they are, they absolutely get rid of all the bad stuff before the water goes to a house, or maybe not.
So it's a very complicated answer for that one. So right now, PFAS are just starting to come more into the radar right now because there's people. Even utilities are getting more aware that perhaps they are present in their drinking water sources. And so the US EPA, because of the frequent detection happening right now and the concern about human health, they just recently passed final maximum contaminant levels for six PFAS compounds in drinking water. This will go in effect right now in 2031, so utilities are being given a chance to improve their systems so that they can effectively remove PFAS if they're present in their source waters. And so by that time, the utilities will be required to meet those drinking water standards. Right now, Pennsylvania in 2023 also passed their statewide maximum contaminant levels, which was a good thing. It's one of the few states that have done that. And so right now, utilities in Pennsylvania are required to meet those Pennsylvania maximum contaminant levels for two PFAS compounds that are very commonly detected. And so there are different treatment options that utilities can use, and some of those are using granular activated carbon systems that can remove the PFAS, and other cases they might use reverse osmosis systems or ion exchange systems. So it will just depend on what the utility is capable of. They vary in cost, of course, and also a bunch of other factors, but utilities will react accordingly to manage that.
Is there, obviously, if they're there, we want to be treating them, and you just touched on the mm-hmm. methods that we use to do that. Is there a way that we're aware of to just keep, I mean, ideally, you just like to not have to deal with them. Uh-huh. Is there a way to keep these forever chemicals, the PFAS, out of the water supply to begin with, moving forward?
No, and we'll mention we can't take calls. We apologize. No, we just don't have.
Go ahead.
Our setup is not set up for that. So
yeah.
Go ahead.
So of course, in the past, before this was known as a problem, every system was operating based on existing guidelines back then, and so right now, as communities and governments and regulatory authorities are becoming more aware about the issue, they're also reacting accordingly. So there are some guidelines that perhaps will come into place to help limit the potential introduction of these PFAS compounds into the environment. And so those will take different structures, but one of those would be first in the drinking water side, the utilities ensuring that the water getting to you is clean. And then in other cases, they're cases where they've found contamination, they're trying to work and figure out the source of contamination and manage it by perhaps working with the person responsible to help provide services to clean the systems.
All right. Now, Faith, this study that you folks did, which was, I guess, a statewide study, what caught my eye here, and I'm quoting here from a release, it said of all the wells that were tested, and it was 167 of those, 65% had something in the water, these PFAs, and 18% of them hit or exceeded maximum levels. Now, when I saw that, I thought, oh, my gosh, that's bad. Is that bad? I mean, maybe I'm exaggerating a little bit. Is that really bad?
So, in general, though, PFAS are very prevalent in the environment just because it's reflecting how commonly we are using them in our day-to-day activities. So low detections are very common in different matrices, whether it's water, soil, et cetera. And so it's not as surprising that there's a frequent detections of PFAS, but really for us it felt like a good news because we did not know what we were going to find. Good news that not many wells were exceeding that maximum contaminant level, which is the safety threshold right now. And so, in a nutshell, it's not as surprising that we are detecting PFAS in drinking water sources. Other studies at a national level have also found PFAS in different surface water and groundwater sources, just as a reflection of how frequently used they are in our societies.
Is there, like with bacteria, a lot of times it's like, hey, you got to boil your water. I'm guessing boiling water is not going to help this, or does it help? Instinctively, I'm thinking making the chemicals hot isn't necessarily going to be a good thing. But
it's a good question. So bacteria, indeed, boiling helps, but when it comes to dissolved chemicals like this, boiling might not necessarily help. But there are things that homeowners can do. For example, people who had those detections above the safety thresholds, the same treatment technologies that are available that utilities can use are also available at a point of use. So point of use would be a treatment where you install at a sink or a place where you're using that water most frequently. And then in other cases, they can also be installed as a point of entry. So that's water that is treating, a system that is treating all the water coming into the home. So the same technologies are available that homeowners can implement in cases where they feel the levels are, of concern. So when we talk to our participants about these results, we try to educate that, yes, it's very concerning, it's a hot topic, finding it in your water can be disturbing, but there are things that people can do, and some of those is manage it at the water source where you're using that water.
All right, let's take a break here. All right, our guest is Faith Kabuyi, who is with Penn State Ag Extension, talking about a recent study about private wells for water. But really, folks, this is something we all need to be paying attention to, I think. We've got some more questions for Faith, but we're going to take a break here. You're listening to Let's Talk on 98.7 The Fox, and we will come right back.
Your home for the Goon and Ironhead.
Ironhead and the Goon.
Exclusively on Sports Radio 98.7.
The Fox.
Interest rates and inflation are out of control. Is your credit card debt also out of control? It's time to resolve your debt and take back control for a lot less than what you owe. If you have $10,000 or more in credit card debt, then you need to call us right now. Debt Fix Pros can significantly reduce the amount you owe, and you could be debt-free faster than you think.
I knew we had to do something. Our debt was growing.
It was getting out of control, and we just didn't know what to do.
We saw an ad for Debt Fix Pros. We called, and they showed us how fast they could get us out of debt.
It really was amazing, and now we're back in control.
Call now, and we'll show you how easy it is to fix your debt. The call and consultation are free. Call Debt Fix Pros right now. Call 800-930-0388. That's 800-930-0388. 800-930-0388.
Our military heroes deserve our thanks. Patriotic Hearts is there to assist those in need, especially in the transition back to family and civilian life. You can help by donating an unwanted car, truck, SUV, or van. Your donation supports the programs that make a difference in the lives of veterans and those actively serving our country. Call today for a fast, free pickup. Your donation will not only be greatly appreciated, but will also qualify as a tax deduction. Call 800-917-1544 to help our military heroes. Call 800-917-1544. Operators are standing by 24/7. Patriotic Hearts, helping our soldiers and veterans live a better life. Call 800-917-1544. That's 800-917-1544. Together, we can make a difference.
Are you looking for the best pizza in town? Look no further than Brothers Pizza in downtown Bellefonte. Good, fast, and did I mention really good? Brothers Pizza also delivers to the immediate area, but you can also enjoy sit-down dining with convenient on-street parking. For fast, friendly delivery, call 355-5581 or stop by at 102 North Allegheny Street in downtown Bellefonte. Brothers Pizza, downtown Bellefonte.
Have you checked out our new website, 987thefox.info? When you do, be sure to scroll to the bottom, enter your email address. Then sometime soon, you'll be a 987 The Fox insider with our newsletter feature, thoughts from some of our hosts that you won't get on our shows, messages from sponsors, and even special deals as an insider newsletter exclusive. We'll take good care of your email address, no sharing or selling. Hope you'll join us on 987thefox.info and enter your email address at the bottom. Be an insider, only from 987 The Fox.
Interest rates and inflation are out of control. Is your credit card debt also out of control? It's time to resolve your debt and take back control for a lot less than what you owe. If you have $10,000 or more in credit card debt, then you need to call us right now. Debt Fix Pros can significantly reduce the amount you owe, and you could be debt-free faster than you think.
I knew we had to do something. Our debt was growing.
It was getting out of control, and we just didn't know what to do.
We saw an ad for Debt Fix Pros. We called, and they showed us how fast they could get us out of debt.
It really was amazing, and now we're back in control.
Call now, and we'll show you how easy it is to fix your debt. The call and consultation are free. Call Debt Fix Pros right now. Call 800-930-0388. That's 800-930-0388. 800-930-0388.
Save big and head to your local Toro dealer, Maxwell Equipment, for the spring sales event going on now. Stop in today and get up to $1,500 off select Z-Master mowers and Grandstand, Multi-Force, Stand-Ons, plus $500 off select attachments. Visit Maxwell Equipment on Shiloh Road for more details on promotions and financing offers. Toro, count on it.
Your home for the Goon and Ironhead.
Ironhead and the Goon.
Exclusively on Sports Radio 98.7.
The Fox.
It is a Wednesday edition of Let's Talk here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox. Jeff and Scott with you again. A little open phone time coming up at the end of this morning's big show.
All right, talking about water quality, here, especially here in Pennsylvania. And our guest, again, is Faith Kabuyev from Penn State Ag Extension. Now, Faith, by chance, I suppose, you folks are doing a webinar today, this afternoon at 1 o'clock, talking about private well systems and these chemicals that are out there. Faith, do you have any idea? If we were on a computer program, I'd click a link and I'd go there. I keep clicking this piece of paper and it won't go anywhere. All right. How can people find this webinar? Because I'm assuming people can still sign up for this.
Yeah,
right?
People can still sign up, and you could find it by searching on the Penn State Extension website. So the title for that webinar is PFAS in Private Wells and Key Influencing Factors. So if you search that, it will lead you to on the Penn State Extension site where to register. And I think you can register all the way until, I think, 1 minute to the webinar.
Okay.
Yeah.
So folks, do a web search for the Penn State Ag Extension website. And then look for the link for this webinar. It's free this afternoon. It starts at 1 o'clock. So if you have concerns, that would be a good thing to do. Now, Faith, the study that you folks did, I guess it was statewide. Are the problems statewide, or is it more prevalent maybe in certain places in Pennsylvania?
Yeah, so in general, there were detections across the state. There were some areas where we found more detections of PFAS than others, but that was also based on the analysis that the lead author did on the paper that we'll be talking about, as a result of surrounding activities near the in some of the regions. So in general, we were finding that some areas that had more developed land uses, so these are for example, the southeastern parts of the states seemed to have more frequent detections of the PFAS, and that could be because perhaps there is a higher density of potential PFAS sources around there. That doesn't mean that all developed areas have the issue. Indeed, other areas could similarly have issues, as long as, especially if they are near some potential PFAS contamination source.
Now, do I assume of all these wells that were tested, at least a couple were here, like close by here someplace?
Yeah.
What were the results there? Do you know?
Oh, no, I don't know offhand. I would have to pick up. But there were a majority of the state, the counties were tested. So I think the monitoring on private wells tested about 47 counties. We did not have all counties participate, but this was also just because we were recruiting participants as part of the Master Well Owner Network program. So that's a volunteer group network that is trained by Penn State Extension on how to care for and maintain private water systems. Hmm. We like working with our volunteers, and they also end up spreading that education back to their immediate communities. So they reach more people, they help reach more people than we really can. So the group, so we were recruiting people from that volunteer group. So we have, in some cases, don't have as much volunteers in some counties, but the Pennsylvania DEP monitoring data that was also included in that study monitored a lot more counties within the state.
Now, I'm going to assume, Faith, maybe not, you folks did this study, you got the results. Again, it was, 18% were over the maximum level of stuff in the water. Did those folks get notified? Like, hey, you got a problem here.
Yeah, so when we recruited people to participate in the study, we sent them test kits, instructions on how to test, collect sample, bring it back to us. But in addition to that, they get a report that will be sent to them. So because this was a funded study, it was a free monitoring for them. It was just perhaps their time to participate and collect sample. We provide them results that details what we found, and because it's an emerging topic, we try to offer opportunities for the participant to understand what those results mean. So we send them a report, but we also did a webinar to provide an opportunity for the participants to ask questions, but they were also offered an opportunity to ask questions one-on-one via a phone call to explain what was there, how they can take care of that issue, and ask any other questions. So, yeah.
All right. Now, for this 18%, mm-hmm. It sounds like they've got a problem. I mean, what do you do? They got to change something, I assume. What do those homeowners do if they have an excessive level of this stuff in their water?
Yeah. So, for those that had high levels, but we were recommending that they look into some treatments that we talked about earlier. So some of those could be either a point of use treatment or a point of entry treatment, depending on what type of levels they had. But the levels we were finding were not, even though they were above the maximum contaminant level, we've seen other areas that have had extremely high concentrations. So we were relieved in some way that we did not have alarming levels that would be challenging to manage.
Yeah. But I mean, do you run out and buy a filter? I mean, what do you do?
Yeah, so you can purchase some of the water treatment systems. Those are available for purchase, and some of them are marketed because they've tried their performance on removing some of these forever chemicals. And so when people are purchasing those treatment devices, whether it's reverse osmosis, granular activated carbon filters, or ion exchange systems, we encourage them to look for systems that are certified. So the National Sanitation Foundation certified, so NSF certification for P4 or PFOS, or Water Quality Association certification. So that will tell you at least it's been tested by a third party and verified that it can help remove some of these emerging contaminants.
Does it depend what the contaminants are as to which, are they all basically equally effective, or is there one that the iron would work better, or osmosis would work better with this one, or are they all generally effective against the PFAS?
That's an excellent question. In general, they are equally effective. So the granular activated carbon is effective, and it's just a matter of how it's going to be installed in the home. For example, reverse osmosis is more feasibly installed at as a point of use system rather than a point of entry, just because it might be very expensive to install it to treat all the water coming in, since it's a high pressure membrane filtration. But in granular activated carbon systems, since it's a filter medium, it can be installed as a point of entry. But there are other granular activated systems, too, that can be used even in a Brita filter, for example. That is just a carbon filter that helps with some of this, removing some of the contaminants.
We're talking about drinking water.
Yeah.
Are the PFAS a concern, like with shower water, bath water?
Yeah. There was a study that done, I think, by the CDC, and they were finding, they reported that they do not think that skin contact is of concern, just because it seems like drinking water and other sources that perhaps we could be exposed to, maybe through food or even in some cases perhaps inhalation of contaminated particles, could be of more concern than skin dermal contact.
Gotcha. Yeah. Faith, there are some people today arguing about fluoride in water.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. Do you folks study that? Is there a concern about fluoride in water? Some people have no problem. Some people want it out of the water. I don't want that in there. And this would primarily be, again, what I call city water.
Uh-huh.
All right. I don't know. Do you have an answer for this one? Fluoride, bad, good, anything?
I do not. But it seems like it's a controversial topic, regardless of which direction. So some people don't care for it. Some care for it. Personally, I think it's a good thing for teeth, but I guess there are some communities that might be more concerned about its addition in water, but I don't have any good preference or strong inclination either way.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, we were talking about filters. Now, again, Scott, I'm the guy in the rural area. I've got a private well, all right? In my refrigerator, I have a filter. And if I want to get water, I usually get it out of the fridge or ice cubes and stuff like that. Is that little, and the filter's not very big. It's about, I'm holding up a pair of glasses here. It's about that big. Will that get rid of the forever chemicals, that little thing in my fridge?
So for all the treatments, it typically comes down to how well you maintain it. So if regardless of how good a system you have installed, if you're not maintaining it the way it's supposed to, it ends up not doing what it was intended to do. So as long as that one is being maintained, it might also depend on how much is coming in, since it might be a small medium, how much PFAS you have coming into that source water prior to treatment, but they can remove some of the low concentrations of PFAS. But all in all, they need to be taken care of well. So we try to point that out because it's very easy to forget to maintain some of the systems that we install.
Maintenance, always important with everything.
Always about
it's so easy to let it go.
Yeah.
If folks are listening now and they're like, well, I have a private well, I wasn't part of this study, mm-hmm. man, that's a bummer. Like, they should get it tested, yes, and do you know how that you go about getting water tested for PFAS in particular?
Yeah, so the Pennsylvania DEP has provides some certification to laboratories for PFAS testing in water. So I believe right now there are about five or six commercial labs that are distributed across the state that actually work with homeowners by providing kits and sampling instructions on how to collect samples and send results back to all. But it will be at a fee that perhaps range from $200 to maybe even $400. It will depend on what you're testing for, how the medium, because you could be testing for other medium, and they tend to use common methodologies to analyze for these PFAS. So with regards to should people test, we often say if people are located to potential PFAS sources and they are concerned about their private water system, then perhaps it's okay to know what is in the water, right? The only way to know would be by conducting a test.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll be honest, Faith, I can't remember the last time I tested my water.
We need to get you one.
I need to get one. I think I do. Now, here's a follow-up question, all right? Mm-hmm. We've had a very wet spring. We've had a lot of rainfall. We're significantly above normal in rainfall. Mm-hmm. The other day I had to go downstate, and I crossed the Susquehanna River over a bridge. The Susquehanna was extremely brown. I mean, it was brown. I'm thinking, I wouldn't want to be a fish in that water. Holy moly. Should we be concerned about excessive rainfall? Does that do something about underground water quality? Or doesn't that really matter?
So anything that's happening on the surface, really directly or indirectly, will impact groundwater quality. So in some cases, as that rainfall is passing in, some of the water will infiltrate and make its way to our underlying aquifers. And so if that water is transporting any type of surface pollution, in some cases the soil might do a good job filtering some of those, but in other cases they might end up contaminating groundwater sources. And so for private well owners, we often encourage people to take care of their well. The wellhead area, so we recommend 100-foot radius, minimum radius for our wellhead protection zone. So any activity there can impact water quality. So we try to teach people to really be cognizant of what's going on there. But apart from that, it's the construction features. For example, having a sanitary well cap that tightly holds onto the casing, seals it properly, can prevent direct entry of surface runoff or water if it rains too much that the well casing is covered, making sure your casing is at least a minimum of 12 inches above the ground to prevent the chances that it can be covered with water. Of course, in some cases, the rain might be so much that it might be covered, but at least doing something in your part to prevent that potential contamination. And inspecting the well, making sure there's no cracks on the casing. So those could prevent direct entry, but in reality, though, surface water, as it's raining, it will infiltrate and at some point will make its way to groundwater, but it might be slow, but it will get there.
All right, note to Scott, go home and check the wellhead today. I probably haven't done that in a long time either. Shame on me. Well, Faith, we appreciate you coming in today.
Yeah.
That's some really good information. And again, you folks are doing this live webinar online. It's today at 1 o'clock. Go online, search for the Penn State Ag Extension website.
Yes.
And there should be a link there for this free webinar today. Just register in advance or, like you said, maybe 5 minutes before it starts, I guess. That's good enough. Folks, probably register in advance. That'd be a good idea. Especially if you have a private well. That might be something you want to check out today.
Yeah, that'd
be a good idea.
But yeah, we'll be talking about some of the factors that might influence the occurrence of PFAS in private water systems and in some things homeowners can do to protect their water.
All right. Well, Faith, again, thanks for coming in today.
Thank you.
It was nice to meet you.
Thank you.
And that was some good information there. Yeah.